The Toronto Blue Jays played their first road series of the season, and it did not go so great. The bats went cold, and we were swept by the hands of the New York Mets. Let's get into it. Good evening, everybody. It is Sunday, April 6th, and welcome to episode 243 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. Jesse Burrell here, joined by David Fulton, and today on the show, as mentioned at the top, the Blue Jays bats go ice cold, scoring a total of just 3 runs in 27 innings against the Mets, and we will dive into all of that. The lack of home run power that the Blue Jays have shown so far, the questionable bullpen decisions that led to a loss in Game 2, and so much more in this series. But to really break this series down, we had to call up a friend. And who else to talk better baseball than a guy who is a New York Mets fan? He runs the New York Mets subreddit, or is a moderator there. His name is Scott. Scott, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here. This was an interesting weekend. Not just questionable bullpen decisions, but also a lot of questionable umpiring throughout the weekend.
Yes.
So really excited to get into it and talk a little bit about what we saw over the last 3 games.
It was very good. Good for the Mets, you know, in front of their home crowds, the first games with Juan Soto there. Glad they got to see him do some good things and get a win. Tough look for our Toronto Blue Jays, though, here. Dave, initial thoughts, I suppose, on the series before we dive too deep.
Yeah, I mean, it was. It's been a week of extremes with coming off the high highs of the National Series into the low lows of the Mets series here. Honestly, it's a series of missed chances at the end of the day. A lot of near misses and a lot of things that could have broke the other way, and it would have been a very different series.
I've seen that a lot from the history of their Toronto Blue Jays, getting guys on and not being able to capitalize. It was more true in this series against the New York Mets. But first, before we dive too deep, Scott, I want you to tell us a little bit about your story. How'd you get into baseball? How'd you become a Mets fan? What led you to, I guess, where you are here today?
Absolutely. So I am one of those people that a bit of a contrarian. So my father was a New York Yankees fan, diehard, but both my grandparents are from New York. They're both Brooklynites and had that National League baseball love. So my dad tried to pull me towards the Yankees. I naturally went, okay, great. You're a Yankees fan? No, I'm going to go with that other team. Plus, blue and orange. We have to all agree here. Blue and orange is a lot better than those sacred pinstripes.
Yeah, we're very much anti-Yankees on this show. So we have the love for that. Yeah, so that's awesome, and it led to here you are today. Glad to hear it. Glad you are a one that is against the New York Yankees. We love that over here. All right, let's get into the series here. Game one of the series, it was the home opener for the New York Mets, and Scott, I believe you were at this game. It was a 5-0 final for the Mets there. Game two, the Blue Jays took a 2-0 lead into the eighth inning, but were unable to hold on as they lose 3-2, spoiling a very good Chris Bassitt start in this one. And in game three, the game that took place just this afternoon, the bats cold again. We scored our only run thanks to a bases loaded hit by pitch, and that was all we got as the Mets squeak out a 2-1 victory. So after this series, the Jays are 5-5, 10 games into the season. Third place in the AL East. We're a game and a half back behind the 6-3 Yankees for the division lead. Our playoff odds have dropped to 36.5%. With that being said, Dave, not a lot of great options for our Toronto Blue Jays, but give us your player of the series for this series against the Mets.
That's a tough one. Honestly, I think it's probably a toss-up between Bassitt and Vladdy. I mean, Vladdy was probably the most consistent hitter throughout the series. There were some, you know, some bright spots from some other guys. I really liked Roden's performance in the second game of the series, on base 3 out of 4 times. But from a consistency standpoint, Vladdy was the best hitter. And I think we got the best starting pitcher performance out of Chris Bassitt. Although honorable mention to Bowden Francis, I thought he pitched really well today as well.
Good stuff there. I'm with you on Chris Bassitt. We'll touch a little bit more about him and Vladdy as we get later into the episode. But Scott, from your perspective, whether it be the Mets side or the Blue Jays side, hit us with your player of the series here.
So for me, it was very clear cut. There was one Met that showed up, well, I'd say 2 of the 3 games. He was quiet yesterday, but it was definitely has to be the polar bear, our guy, Pete Alonso. He really is showing himself to be a different player this year than he was last year. And he showed that all throughout this series, starting off game one with a home run. First at bat came up, gave us the lead, and we never looked back. Today, he once again showed up, went 2 out of 3. He just had an all-around phenomenal series, and our pitching was mostly there, but I think I have to give my tip my hat to Pete.
Scott, you don't know this, but the tip your cap thing around Toronto Blue Jays land is like a sacred phrase. We don't say this often because last season when the Blue Jays struggled and we went to 74 wins, after every time the opposing pitcher would come up and shut us down, John Schneider, our manager, would just go, "Oh, we faced a good starter today. You got to tip your cap to them." And we're like, Tyler Alexander is getting a hat tip here? Like, what is going on here? So tip your cap, bring some PTSD, I suppose, to Blue Jays fans. But shout out to Pete Alonso. We spent a lot of part of the offseason talking Pete Alonso because we thought maybe, hey, he's a free agent. He could be a fit with our team here, you know, full-time DH, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about setting the tone for the series early. Pete Alonso taking that pitch, which honestly I thought was a pretty good pitch from Kevin Gausman too, fastball down and away. And he went out and still hit it to right field. I don't know how he even did it, but you know, 101 off the bat, Pete Alonso's that strong. And he's really showing, at least early in the season, that he's been worth that money.
Absolutely. Not to dominate a little bit, but talking about Pete. Pete is one of those interesting players with a lot of his home runs, especially when he goes oppo, that there's only one player in the ballpark that knows exactly that that is a home run, and it is Pete Alonso. Whether it was the NL wildcard game 3 last year or that home run on Friday, and I was sitting maybe about 50 feet from where that ball landed. And until it landed, I wasn't sure if that was a loud out or out of the park. So that is one of the interesting things about the guy.
What's it like to have your number 3 hitter in the order hit home runs? Because the Blue Jays are one of only, I think, 2 teams in baseball who do not have a home run this season from one of the top 3 spots in their order. So what's that like, getting production from that top part?
It feels good. There was a lot of debate during the offseason. The Mets fan base was truly split. And even today, when I was on the Mets subreddit saying that I was going to be on this podcast tonight, one of the messages somebody told me to relay is to send our best to Vladdy, because we want him next year. That was one of the dominant discussions last winter, was do we stick with the polar bear or do we wait it out, ride it out, move Mark Vientos across the diamond, put him at first, and try to outbid you guys for Vladdy. Personally, I'm a fan of hometown heroes. I love my polar bear. You can't quite see it, but that right there is a signed jersey, and I was trying to get it framed in. But I think for us, Pete is a better fit. I saw the news today that you guys might be having a big extension coming. I really do hope you land that. And it just is interesting. We have Pete right now that is off to a phenomenal start. Like I said, he's a different player. He is laying off of those down and away sliders, which killed him all last year. He is having complete at bats. And right now he is outperforming both from a vision standpoint and a power standpoint the guy right before him, the $765 million man himself, Juan Soto. So it is definitely interesting seeing how stars, both on your team and mine, have been getting off to start their seasons.
It's great stuff. Let's get into that news you did touch about, though, here, because, Dave, I know you and I have been talking all offseason about why haven't we signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr. yet? What in the world is going on? And then all the saga throughout spring training with that happening. There were some reports sprinkling through the last few days or so that the Blue Jays are getting close to that $500 million extension. But we've been fooled by those before. We weren't ready to buy in. But just this afternoon, Jeff Passan was on ESPN. He also went on the Fan radio show here in Toronto, muttered something similar that the Blue Jays and him are hopeful to get a deal done here within the next week or so. So we will see, I suppose. I don't want to get too amped up about this until something's official, you know, but Jeff Passan is saying something now. So the fact that he is saying something, there's definitely some smoke here, Dave. What are your thoughts? Is this, I know I've asked you this question probably 10 times already, but I'm going to ask you to again. Is this the week we get that long-term extension to make Vlad a Blue Jay for life?
I mean, I agree with you that generally speaking, when there's smoke, there's fire. I've been fooled by this before, though. I mean, we were talking in like the depths of February before, I think it was when pitchers and catchers were reporting that I was like, why haven't we signed this guy? We need to sign him right now because it's going to be more expensive because he's going to have a monster season. He's off to a pretty good start so far. So I think it makes an enormous amount of sense for them to be signing him as early as possible, because the longer that you leave this, like we said the last time I was on, it just creates drama and tension around the team, with speculation from everywhere and anywhere about, oh, is he going to sign? Is he not going to sign? Which team is he going to play for next year? And secondarily, it's only going to get more expensive, especially if he continues apace, if he continues to have a very good season like we're expecting him to have. That number is only going to go up. So if you can sign him right now, like you said before, the best time to sign him was 4 years ago. The second best time is right this second. So I'm really hopeful that this is the time that they actually decide to pull the trigger on it.
And I'm with you. I really do hope a deal can get done soon, just so we don't have to talk about it anymore, just so we can know we can wear that Guerrero jersey to Rogers Center for the next 14, 15 plus years. And worth noting, this was the Blue Jays' first road series, road trip of the season, right? New York, the Mets specifically, are a team that's going to be heavily linked because Steve Cohen is their owner. He has and bottomless pockets, and like it would make a lot of sense there. So we saw from this series at the home opener pregame, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is in the outfield talking to Juan Soto, who we know they're friends with, right? Mm-hmm, when the Blue Jays are coming out, and Scott, you were there, you can probably vouch to this. The Blue Jays are coming out with their player introductions. I heard quite a bit of cheers for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. from the Mets faithful coming out there. And like, next stop, we go to Boston. We go to Fenway. There's going to be more of the same there at Fenway. And then we even go to Baltimore. Maybe not Baltimore, but they'll at least ask the question. And this is going to be a trend all season. So the sooner we can nip this in the bud, the better. And then it would be just, we can move on and focus on playing on the field. Scott, you have a thought on that, especially from the cheers there?
Absolutely. We just went through this ourselves last year, Pete Alonso coming up on free agency. And there were a lot of similar discussions in our fan base. And as I look around the league, what teams need first basemen? There are a few fits that make more sense to me as an outside perspective for where Vladdy lands next year than Toronto. Because one of the biggest holes in the league for a team that needs a first baseman is those assholes across town, the Yankees. And if I recall correctly, I believe there is a direct quote from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. saying that he would rather be dead than be a Yankee. So with that out of the way, you look, Diamondbacks just filled their hole after they lost Christian Walker. There aren't many teams that have need and are willing to spend that type of money. I think Toronto just makes sense.
And we all agree with you. I know all of our fans listening at home would also agree with you. Let's put a pin in this and stay tuned to that a little bit going forward. But let's talk a little bit more about what we saw on the field here. And let's talk a little bit about it first. There wasn't much positives from the Toronto Blue Jays sign, but I did want to shout out a couple of our hitters here, Dave, that I thought did impress me. First off, Alan Rodon, who you mentioned off the top, two for six in this series. He also got hit by another pitch. Alan Rodon, weirdly good at getting hit by pitches. I don't know if that's a skill, but I think that's his fourth he's had so far this year.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
He's in the makings to be the next Brandon Guyer. So
love that. I hope he has a little bit of better career of Brandon Guyer. He did hit a nice double off the wall. I was proud of him. You mentioned Vlad, and his final total was 4 for 11 in the series. All four hits were singles. We have seen Vlad occasionally at times start really looking like he gets in his head in those big moments, right? On the home opener, he swung at more pitches out of the zone than we've ever seen before. And I want to specifically talk about the game today. Edwin Diaz came in to try to get the save, and his command was a little bit off. I think he had just allowed to, it's when he hit Rodon and then he hit Bichette, right? Vladimir Guerrero Jr. comes up and he swings wildly at the first pitch. And I understand Vlad probably feels the pressure. He knows this is my team. I got to be the one to drive in this tying run, et cetera, et cetera. But after you just saw a guy wildly hit two of your batters, you can't be swinging at that first pitch. And it was a good pitch from Diaz too. Soft ground ball to short and the game is over. Vlad needs to clean up just a little bit of that in his game to really become the elite MVP style hitter we know he can be. So I just, that caught my attention on Vlad. Something you saw this series maybe?
Yeah, it's a lot of the same of the same sort of thing that we were seeing from him in the seasons kind of in between his really, really good seasons, where the bat control wasn't quite there. The decision to swing wasn't always crisp. You know what I mean? I think it's pretty well established at this point in time that Vlad is at his best when he is controlling things, when he's making a deliberate effort to choose the right pitch instead of trying to find a pitch with the bat. And so I'm a little worried about that. I mean, I'm glad that he was still getting on base. I mean, there was very little to like about the hitters from the Jays perspective in the series, all things considered. But if he wants to, you know, get back to what the kind of form that he was in last year, you didn't see that a lot from him. You didn't see him reaching. You didn't see him guessing. He just was like, okay, I'm going to control the strike zone. You're going to have to come to me at some point in time, and I'm going to pick the pitch to swing at here instead of going fishing. So hopefully he cleans that up going forward from here.
And he will. There's a long season to go. We know the thing. Maybe Vlad's got something else on his mind right now. Who knows? Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It was interesting to see some Blue Jays hitters who kind of struggled. Dave and Scott, if you want to lay it and put on any of these here as well. I know you know Andrés Giménez was a Mets prospect, came up
old with friend Andrés.
Yes, came up with the Mets system, a big part of the Francisco Lindor trade. He's been hitting cleanup for us, and we've talked in our last few episodes about how good Andrés Giménez was. He's leading the team in home runs with three, which I don't think anyone saw coming here. But also, he struggled quite a bit in this season, this series. I believe he went, had the number somewhere, I just lost it, but I think he only went like 2-for-10 or something. Struck out with the bases loaded a few times. Did not look so great there. Will Wagner, too, hitless in this series. Did walk for what it's worth. Anthony Santander, 1-for-9 in this series. The guys that were getting quite regular at-bats did not produce in this series. Dave, out of those three players, which one concerned you the most?
Truthfully, it's tough to say that I'm super concerned about any of them. Just because it is so early. I mean, it sucks. You want to see them perform better than that. They're going to have to if they want to stay in contention, you know, deeper into the season here. But at the end of the day, you know, it's still very early April. Guys are still kind of getting into the rhythms of things, I think, to a certain extent. It's still pretty cold outside. So that you never know how that's affecting guys, right? Some guys really like playing in the cold, and some guys really hate it because they're used to playing somewhere warmer all the time. So hard to put too much stock into it. Although I am a little bit personally disappointed about Will Wagner, because I know you know how much of a Will Wagner truther I am. So it would have been nice to see him get a few knocks at the very least, but I'm not super, super concerned. I think it was just a combination of a kind of a generally anemic offense from the Jays combined with some pretty good pitching performances from the Mets.
Yeah, I'd say there's another factor at play too. Weather.
Go ahead.
New York City Field is already in itself. It is a pitcher's park. We've historically been a pitching first franchise, right? The era we're in currently of having a strong offense is honestly weird to me. But we're a pitcher's park that, especially when we're talking April in New York City, Friday's game was an outlier. It was 65 degrees. It was hot and humid, relatively hot and humid for the time frame. And that's part of what I think helped Pete, that ball just inched over the fence. If that game was today, that ball would have died on the warning track. We're facing a reality where a lot of those balls that were hit hard, those would have been home runs at the same park in June. So we had some good pitching. We had some very quality pitching. Griffin Canning, worst pitcher in baseball, Griffin Canning, had a great outing yesterday. But part of it is helped by the weather killing and making some loud outs.
And that's a great point too. Think about the Blue Jays season so far. Like, we started in Dunedin, Florida, where it's nice, cool, fantastic weather. And the first seven games of the season for the Blue Jays were all at home in the dome with the roof closed. This is the first time since last September the Blue Jays have gone out and really had to play in the cold. There's no way their body's used to that. And it could be as simple as that the weather had gotten in and affecting the Toronto Blue Jays. Worth noting, too, with guys like Anthony Santander, who I know a lot of Blue Jays people, we just gave this guy a ton of money. He hit 48 home runs last year. Why hasn't he hit a home run yet? He was a slow starter last year in Baltimore, too, when the weather was cold. Worth paying attention to as we go forward here. Did you, Dave, have anything you wanted to add on George Springer? Maybe his defense. He did let one get by, which led to the Jesse Winker triple. Also crashed into the wall pretty hard. Struck out a bunch, but also hit a triple himself. So, Dave, did you have a thought on George Springer in this series?
It's nice to see that he's not turning into the player, like not immediately downsliding the way that we were kind of catastrophizing in the lead up here, where we're like, oh my God, he might actually be cooked. So it's nice to see that he's still got some juice in the bat. defensive play, you know, apart from that one miscue, was, I think, pretty reasonable. Big ups to him for coming back after that face planting into the wall. Like, that was a little crazy. I thought maybe he was going to take a few days off after that, but one way or the other, I think he's got room to come up, but I don't think it was as bad as maybe we were thinking it was going to be. So I'm pretty okay with it so far.
One more fallout though with George Springer that I did want to bring up today. With George Springer not being able to start in the lineup against David Peterson, a left-handed pitcher today, that we had to DH Alejandro Kirk. And look, Tyler Heineman has a home run. He was okay in this series. He's not a guy you want in the lineup often. And with the Blue Jays having to put Davis Schneider to start in left field, we didn't have any right-handed bats now. So the Jays kind of had to have Alejandro Kirk at DH today. Two hits today, give him credit. But he popped up when we needed him the most. But I will say there's that. But getting Alejandro Kirk off of his feet more with how valuable he is going to be for this team this year is important. And I wonder if the Blue Jays make a roster move sometime in the near future here to address just that. Scott, were there anything else on the hitting performance from either team, Mets or Blue Jays, that you wanted to touch on before we start talking some pitching?
So I'd say first on the Jays. Honestly, glad George Springer was okay. Glad to see life from him today. That was a nasty, nasty hit he took yesterday. And if Jesse Winker had not stopped thinking he had a home run, I genuinely believe that would have been an in-the-park home run, and we would have never had the drama of the bottom of the ninth inning yesterday. But also, Springer, I think, was a victim. Yesterday was some bad umpiring. Both sides were affected, but I'd honestly say nobody was more personally impacted than, I believe, two strikeouts that George Springer got due to some questionable calls that went in our favor. So I'm not too proud to admit that the umpires did definitely play a little bit of a hand there. I did not look at the ump scorecard, so I could be talking completely out of my rear end right now.
It's quite favorable for the Mets. We've looked at it, yes.
Yeah. Just there was definitely some of that at play yesterday. Shout out Jesse Winker. I love the guy. The man is a living embodiment of the 1986 Mets energy. I'm personally planning on getting one of the blue pullovers for him, just because that is entirely the guy's aura. He lives and breathes. I am going to fight you if you look at my team the wrong way.
Yep.
But then he actually shows up at the dish and puts the fight behind the words. So shout out to him, a two triple game. He leads all of MLB since October in triples with, I believe, four or five now, two yesterday alone.
Yeah, two in the postseason for Winker as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so that is four since October 4th.
Yeah. Wow, that makes sense.
Just the man is deceptively speedy. Juan Soto had some clutch moments, and Francisco Lindor, going back to you talking about Vladdy's cold start, relatively cold start right now, if there is something the Mets faithful know well, it is having a star player that doesn't necessarily inspire confidence for the first month or two of the season. Francisco Lindor, historically slow starter, and it has been great to see. It was only his second hit of the series of the season, I believe, during that home opener, but he has turned it on a little bit. This is a little bit of a different look from Lindor, where we are getting on base, where he is. I'm not. I'm in the stands. He is getting on base. He is able to move the base runners like that bottom of the ninth, walk off, sack fly, and he is doing exactly what he needs to get done to put the team in a position to succeed.
Scott, who would win in a fight between Jesse Winker and Chris Bassett? If you could only pick one, who would it be?
So I'm going to say Jesse Winker is not fighting Chris Bassett because
probably
Chris Bassett, you look at him, the man looks like a Bassett hound. He just has that droop in his face that he lives up to his name. There are those people that you see their name and you're like, that makes sense. Chris Bassett is one. And I don't think he wants to do that to an old Met. Just he's a new Met. But he is a Met folk hero, even from his time. He was a heel that had a face turn, and the fan base loves him for it.
Good. I was going to say Max Scherzer, too, but he's even older than Chris Bassett, so probably along the same lines there. All right, let's talk some starting pitching, Dave, because the Blue Jays did get some good starting pitching in this. Yep. And now every single starting member of our rotation has now made two starts. So the three we got in this series, Kevin Gausman took the game in the opener. He went 5 1/3 innings pitched, only two hits allowed, did give up three earned runs, two of them off the Pete Alonso home runs, walked two, and zero strikeouts for Kevin Gausman, which caught my attention. Didn't strike out a single Met. I think he only got one swinging strike on his off-speed pitches, which was odd. Post-game, John Schneider said he actually thought the stuff was pretty good. The Mets just came out and made a lot of soft contact against him. So more of the Kevin Gausman pitch to contact era in this one. Chris Bassitt, who we said off the top, was phenomenal. 6 2/3 innings pitch, four hits, no earned runs, nine strikeouts. And what I thought most important in this one, zero walks. Chris Bassitt didn't have a single non-Chicago White Sox start last year where he didn't walk a batter. And so the fact that we had a zero in that walk column is a great positive sign for me. And Bowden Francis, who you said you liked today, 5 1/3 innings pitch, six hits, two earned runs, two walks, six strikeouts. I didn't take a lot from Bowden's start today. I thought, ho-hum, he didn't carry a no-hitter into the sixth this time or seventh this time. It was just more the same, gave the team a thought to win. So, Dave, out of those three starting pitching performances, which one would you like to talk more about?
Well, I think we've done enough touching on the Bassitt one because there's not much to say about it. It was a very dominant performance, especially striking out the side. And I know we were concerned in our pitchers episode before the season started that we got a lot of old guys on this roster now. So how much juice we got in those arms? And it's really encouraging to see Bassitt coming out this early in the season with that kind of a performance. So I do kind of want to touch on the Gausman start, because again, in I want to say it was our season preview episode, we were kind of musing about, is Gausman going to get the strikeout stuff back? And this is not a good sign. Don't get me wrong. All things considered, 5 1/3 with three earned runs, I'll take that more often than not. Right. But at the same time, it is concerning when you're walking a couple guys and you're not striking anybody out. So maybe it is credit to the Mets hitters for taking a really good approach with him. I think there's probably an element of that there, but I am a little worried that some of what we were seeing in the spring, where he wasn't getting the same kind of swing and miss as we were expecting from him from previous seasons, is carrying forward into this year. And so if there is an element of that there, I really hope that he gets into the lab and starts making some adjustments ASAP, because if he doesn't have that strikeout stuff, he's just not the same pitcher. There are guys that can get away with not striking a ton of guys out. But I don't know if Gausman's one of them. And that was one of the big problems last year, is he wasn't striking it in a lot of the performances where he got blown up. He just wasn't able to get guys out.
The velocity is something we've been paying a lot of attention to with Kevin Gausman. Was down a touch. I will probably blame the cold weather on the velocity being down a touch for this one, but it's worth noticing. Scott, did you know coming into the series how good Juan Soto had been off Kevin Gausman in his career?
I did not, actually.
Do you know how he was now? Did they mention it at all?
I didn't look at those splits.
Okay. Well, Kevin Gausman got Juan Soto out twice in this series. That's more times he's gotten him out ever in his big league career. Juan Soto absolutely owned Kevin Gausman, which is probably part of the reason we saw John Schneider pull him out of the game before he faced Juan Soto a third time. And then we got to look at Mason Fluharty as we turn into our bullpen here. Tough job for a rookie making your second ever appearance. And here you go. Go face Juan Soto. Go face Francisco Lindor. Go face Pete Alonso and see what happens, kid. Good luck. I don't think it surprised anybody that Juan Soto hit a double and he fell apart a little bit. Feel bad almost for Mason Fluharty. Yeah. It almost goes to show the state of the Blue Jays bullpen right now is that we kind of are relying on Mason Fluharty to be good now. And that's hard to ask from a guy making his debut here. So, Dave, did you have a quick thought on Fluharty's second performance?
It's rough. It's hard not to look at that performance and say this is maybe why that they left him off the roster initially. if they were expecting that maybe he was going to get roughed up like this, tough to see. Like I say, you always have a bit of sympathy for a rookie going in a situation like that. And I know we're going to touch on it probably in a little bit here, but I blame that more on the decision to put him in than it is about an indictment on his pitching. Cause I don't think we've seen enough of him yet to say one way or the other about what kind of a pitcher he's going to be. I just don't think that's the right spot to put him in, point blank.
Okay, and before we dive a little bit more, Scott, I want to get your opinion. How do you think Carlos Mendoza handled the bullpen in this series? Because, you know, the starters were good. The Blue Jays didn't score many runs, but how do you feel about how he handled your bullpen before we dive into ours?
So that's an interesting question. One of the biggest concerns going into the season on the Mets side, everybody knows we have Pete Alonso, we have Juan Soto, we have Francisco Lindor, we have Jose Siri, if he's able to actually connect. We had Francisco Alvarez, then he fell off. But we had this arsenal of hitters. But people looked at our pitching lineup, both our starting roster as well as our bullpen, and went, who the hell are these guys? So going into the season, there were a lot of question marks around our pitching that the Mets pitching lab has really proven to be the truth, both between what we did last year with Sean Manaea, Luis Severino, both having some major career years, and then seeing what's happening with Sevy right now out in Sacramento. Feels weird to say that. Especially our bullpen right now. We have guys like Huascar Brazoban who have been absolutely lights out. He has still not let up an earned run, and I think he is up over six innings now pitched as a reliever, nine games into the season. Edwin Diaz is Edwin Diaz. I know you were talking a little bit earlier about how today's game gave you a little bit of a different impression when Vladdy came up and started free swinging, but there is nobody more dangerous than Edwin Diaz with two base runners on. It is both heart attack inducing. It's something that's probably going to cause me to see a doctor sooner rather than later. But I know once we have those two runners on, game's over. We have Max Kranich, who's been an absolute revelation. He was on our playoff roster, but never actually took the mound. He was that last man in the 13 pitcher column, but he has been absolutely lights out. So there hasn't been a moment really over the course of, and obviously Reed Garrett, my friend from MetScored, PBH would kill me if I didn't mention Reed Garrett, a little bit of a an online Mets folk hero, Reed Garrett. But we've really had, especially in this series, I think some solid bullpen management. It's really previous series that I've had concern, especially hope to never hear from Danny Young again. I really hope there's a world where I get to eat those words, but I do hope to never hear the words Danny Young is taking the mound to relieve XYZ, because Danny Young taking the mound is us conceding the game. So without him being a factor in this series, I really had no issues at all with how Mendy managed the bullpen.
That's great. That's awesome. I am also a Reed Garrett fan, by the way. I don't know the story behind the internet fandom for Reed Garrett. I'd love to hear about it, but I think he's good. And yeah, I thought they were great. It's amazing. The thing when you said Edwin Diaz with two men on is the, like, you know, it's dynamite. It's going to happen. The Blue Jays at the plate are the worst hitters in baseball with two men on. So it's kind of goes hand in hand. And there are some stats that back that up for what that's worth. Worth noting. All right, Dave, let's dive into a little bit more of the Blue Jays bullpen here. There was some other stuff that happened here, and particularly in game two, when they decided to move Kevin Gausman, they brought in Jimmy Garcia, who's been traditionally lights out for us, did struggle a bit, walked one, gave up a hit, but then was able to get out with the inning. Because he struggled a bit there, though, he wasn't able to come in to start the next inning. So the Blue Jays went with Brandon Little, another lefty, to face 9-1-2 in that order. And it did not go well for Little. And then we brought in Nick Sandlund, who, again, didn't have the command, gave up some hits too. And then we decided to bring in Jeff Hoffman, who threw one pitch, gave up the sacrifice fly, and the game was over. So can't blame that on Jeff Hoffman. John Schneider said post game he wanted to save Jeff Hoffman for a chance to get to a save situation. Felt like he had to bring him in. Well, yeah, I've always hated the saving your closer for a save situation if it doesn't even get to a save situation. And I think John Schneider kind of played himself. So the first time of this series, I think John Schneider really kind of messed this up. But at the same time, I don't think John Schneider has a ton of good options back there. If Chad Green truly wasn't available, which seems weird because he went today and pitched two innings, I don't really know what was happening there. So do you have a thought on John Schneider's bullpen usage here in this series?
Yeah, I didn't love a lot of the decisions. But again, I think you touched on something there is something that we were talking about in the offseason was the top three or four options in this bullpen are, you know exactly what they are. They've been historically very good in terms of Jimmy Garcia, in terms of Chad Green, in terms of Jeff Hoffman. You know exactly what you're going to get from these guys nine times out of 10. They don't blow up very often. They usually get the job done. But then the bottom half was me, you know, when we were speculating who's going to make this team, my answer was, I don't really care what the name on the back of the jersey is, because mm-hmm. no bullpen is going to be 8 or 9 absolute killers. It's going to be 3 to 5 guys who are lights out, and then the rest of the guys just have to be competent. That's all they need to do. You don't have to be an incredible pitcher. You just have to be an okay pitcher. So it is tough when you don't have a ton of what's looking like a ton of good options to go to outside of your top 3 or 4 guys, at least for right now. So yeah, I think to a certain extent, you and I and Jesse have had our gripes in the past about Schneider's bullpen management, rightly so. But at the other, on the other side of the coin, some of these decisions do feel like he's being forced into them because there's really not anyone else to go to. So it's like, do you want, you know, a big old bucket of nothing, or do you want a slightly smaller bucket of nothing from the bullpen? It's a tough choice, right? So I don't know what you do there. I mean, hopefully when we start, you know, getting into the full rhythm of the season here, guys start to pick up a bit. We get guys back from the injured list. But like, apart from that, I don't know. Like I say, it's a couple of guys, you know what you have. And outside of that, it's a big question mark right now.
Yeah. And I think it's definitely a cause of concern for the Toronto Blue Jays. Ultimately, they had the worst bullpen in franchise history last season. They've signed Jimmy Garcia and Jeff Hoffman, and they have not been the problem, but the problem has been the lack of depth behind them. And that still remains for the Blue Jays. I just ran to the leaderboards to check out bullpen ERA on the season. The Blue Jays bullpen ERA, 5.73. It is 6th worst in baseball. Leading the team in bullpen ERA, the New York Mets, 1.47. One of only 3 bullpens who have not allowed a home run so far this year, which is wild. Yeah. So, Scott, honestly, I've always said, and I'll say it again, for a team that you might not think has true talent that is as good but seems to always overperform, think Cleveland last year, and there have been some teams mm-hmm. in the past, always comes from having that elite dominant bullpen. And right now the New York Mets are there and the Toronto Blue Jays are not there. And ultimately, I think if this continues, could be one of the reasons we're on the outside looking in come the end of the season.
It's that David Stearns magic. There's one thing that David Stearns knows. It's pitchers. The guy will pull, like, he could pull me up tomorrow. I have not thrown a baseball as a pitcher in my life. I was a right fielder. If I got thrown into the Mets pitching lab, if David Stern said, this is the guy we need, I would believe in myself. Just that man knows. He, like I mentioned earlier, worst pitcher in baseball, Griffin Canning. And look at his performance yesterday. Look at his performance first time around. He's had a great season. But going back to your bullpen, there was one thing I wanted to bring up about Schneider's decision-making is you asked me about Gausman and Soto. Mm-hmm. What about Hoffman and Lindor?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, they would have faced each other a lot because Hoffman pitched for the Phillies the last 2 seasons. So yeah, enlighten us.
Do you know the last time they saw each other, what happened?
God, was it in the postseason? No, they didn't. No, it would have been that.
It was in the NLDS.
Okay, no. Enlighten me. Tell us.
It was in the NLDS. It was the last game at Citi Field. It was fun at bat for me. I was in the stands. I was in section 310, last row, and we were scoreless at the time. We were losing 1-0, and the bases were juiced, and Francisco Lindor hit the first postseason grand slam, I believe, in Citi Field history, and ended up being a great, great time for all. That was the last time the two men saw each other. So for me, seeing that in the bottom of the ninth, that matchup, I knew it was game.
And all it took was one pitch, and Francisco Lindor got him. I'm just trying to look at the thing right now here. Yeah, he's also worked a walk against him. That was last year. I don't know. Yeah, cool. Great stuff. I love that. That is great to hear. I've got 3 stats, and I want to get – we don't have to dive deep in analysis here, but just 3 stats that I've uncovered so far from the Blue Jays, whether it be this season or in this series. And, Dave, I want you to tell me, and I guess Scott too, if you'd like, which one concerns you the most here. And stat number 1, the Blue Jays have a 131 WRC plus with no runners on base. As soon as a runner gets on base, it becomes 87, so 13% below league average. In this series, the Blue Jays, and this is stat number 2, the Blue Jays went 2-for-21 with runners in scoring position, stranding a total of 28 runners, and the Blue Jays have a -9 home run differential from this place on the season, meaning they've given up 9 more home runs than they have hit themselves. Out of those 3 stats, Dave, which one concerns you the most?
I mean, all of them and none of them, because this is like, this is what I was worried about. This is a lot of what we had last year, where we had, you know, reasonably good pitching performances in a lot of cases, the last couple of years, and the offense just hasn't been there a lot of the time. And so, especially the struggles with runners in scoring position, I think that's the one I'm going to have to go with, because that's been such a consistent issue with this team year after year after year. Even the years where they were winning, you know, 90 plus games, it was still a talking point of how many runners they were stranding in games that they ended up losing. And you'll recall, we missed out on the playoffs by a couple of extremely narrow margins in years mm-hmm. that were like in the window. And if you win one or two more games there, you're in the playoffs. So the fact that this is continuing to be a theme and genuinely seems to be getting worse as time goes on, I don't know what to ascribe it to anymore. I mean, we've cycled out players, we've cycled out staff, we've cycled out assistants. Like, I don't know what the issue is anymore. It's this weird anomaly where they're excellent hitters when there's no pressure. And then as soon as there's a bit of pressure in the form of pushing a base runner across, it's like it evaporates. I don't know mm-hmm. what is going on here, but I guess I'd be more concerned about it if I wasn't already kind of numb to the fact that that's just been the way the Blue Jays have been for a while now.
Yeah, it's quite wild. And I don't have an answer for you either, Dave, but it'll be something to pay attention to going forward. Just a few quick notes before we get on to our questions we have for Scott here. I want to shout out about what has been happening down in the farm here. Blue Jays second round pick last year, Cal Stevens, made his MLB debut, or his pro baseball debut. 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. Jerron Watts Brown, who is a name deep on the Blue Jays farm system list, who I have been very excited about, made his season debut today. Dominant start, 4 2/3 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts for him. And top prospect Arjun Namala went 3-for-5 in his debut for High A Vancouver. Also hit his first home run today, which the Vancouver announcer said has never seen a home run hit that far in Vancouver Canadiens history before. So that caught my attention for the 19 or 20-year-old young prospect growing up. So good stuff there. Dave, anything from the farm that caught your attention? We just skipped up there.
Yeah, nothing special. I mean, you know how I feel about Arjun, so that was kind of like, if I was going to pick one thing, it was probably him, because I really do think that this dude is going to be a guy, like a guy when he gets up here. Still a couple of years away, obviously, but yeah, outside of that, nice to see that we've got some pitching prospects that are looking good in their debuts.
Yeah.
You love to see that, because the amount of homegrown talent that we've brought up in this organization from a pitching perspective is woefully inadequate. So being able to pick some guys out of the farm in the next couple of years is going to be huge for this team's sustainability long term.
Sounds like we just need to pry David Stearns away from the Mets to help get our stuff
for
here.
My dead body.
Yes, okay. All right, we'll let you have that one. Good stuff. All right, for the end of this episode here, Scott, I've got a few questions here I've always wanted to ask a Mets fan, and Dave, I'm sure you have one or two as well. So I got two or three here, and I'll fire them at you. Be as descriptive, as detailed, or you can take it any way you'd like. But I want to talk a little bit about the 2015 season, because Toronto Blue Jays fans love the 2015 season. That was the only year since our World Series win in 1993 we actually won the AL East. And I thought the Blue Jays and Mets were destined to meet in the World Series that year. Damn Kansas City getting in our way of that ALCS. But describe to me a little bit about that team. I know Matt Harvey taking the world by storm was very exciting. Tell me how you felt about being a fan of that team.
So that was a really interesting year as a Mets fan. That was a really year personally and on my journey into diehard fandom. So like I said, I forget if I said it on here talking to you earlier, but my path to becoming a Mets fan. But at the time I lived out west, I lived in Arizona, and the summer of 2015, right after we acquired Yoenis Cespedes, I actually had moved back east. I moved to Pennsylvania, just in Phillies country, which was always fun wearing one of my Mets hats around, especially as we were riding the second half of that season and pushing everyone out of our way. So it was an interesting time to be back east, and I kept pining to get to Citi Field. I'd not been out to Flushing since Shea had been demolished, so I'd never stepped foot in Citi Field. And as the days kept getting closer and the light started getting a little dimmer each night, I was wondering, is this the year we actually do it, or are the wheels going to fall off in September like history has always shown us? And that's the life of being a Mets fan, is we always hope that this is going to be it, but we know that our chain is going to get yanked at any moment. It's why 2022 didn't hurt me. But 2015, it's September now. It's looking real. I'm actually starting to believe. And the days go on. We keep winning. We're moving. The playoffs come. We're actually in it. I made my way out for the NLCS game one. That was my first time at Citi Field. We were hosting the Cubs, and I was standing there in the Shea Bridge. I was just feet away from the Seven Line Army. Not going to get into them today, but was standing feet away from them, and it was a Harvey day. It was the first time I actually got to see Matt Harvey pitch in person. I saw Travis d'Arnaud. I saw Lucas Duda. I saw David Wright for the first time outside of Arizona, because I always made sure, living in Arizona, I went to Chase Field whenever the Mets were in town. But getting to see everybody in that home environment, seeing the people wearing their Batman capes, wearing the cowls, having those I Believe in Harvey signs, because this was peak Dark Knight era, that it was just electric. It was something that came over me in that moment. And it just, we won 4-2, I believe, that was the score that day. It was actually a birthday celebration for me, late October. So whenever the Mets are playing baseball on my birthday, it's a good time. And it was an absolutely electric year. Honestly, I wish we had seen you guys. I will curse the Royals to the day I die for that year.
Me too. Yep.
And as I mentioned about our friends across town earlier, I often congratulate them for last year being the best team in the AL Central in 2024.
Very true. All right. Good stuff. That brought me so much joy, Scott. I loved hearing that story. That was great. Dave, go ahead. Fire away a question.
For me, I'm just curious about what it feels like to be inside the fan base, because, and correct me if I'm wrong here, my understanding is that Mets fans often feel like the Mets are kind of a cursed franchise in a lot of ways. And as someone who cheers for not one or two, but multiple quote unquote cursed franchises, as a Jays fan, a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, a Detroit Lions fan, I've just got it curses all the way around as far as that's concerned. So I'm just curious what that feels like for you, being on the inside of something like being in, to see if the experience is this kind of the same for you as it is for other people who feel that their team is cursed.
Oh, I would highly imagine so. I often joke, because if you're not familiar with the area that Citi Field and before it Shea were built on, it was literally a dump. It was a dump. And the area around the ballparks have been chop shops since time immemorial. However, right now we have the new soccer stadium going up across the street, about 1,500 new units of affordable housing. And if Steve Cohen has his way, there's going to be a casino and an $8 billion park going up where the parking lot currently is. I often joke that our stadiums have been built on ancient car burial grounds, and that is part of why we are cursed. But it's a ride. Like I said about the 2015 season, the entire time I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, we got Yo. That's awesome. When is Yo going to break? Which we saw a couple years later when he got gored by a boar. But that's the type of stuff you expect as a Mets fan. You know your star player is going to get injured on his ranch by a boar. You know that your star player is going to break, your star pitcher is going to get injured in a shower. You know these things are going to happen. 2023, I was there. I was at 20-something games in 2023. We were going into the season one of the World Series odds-on favorites. We were the best team in baseball on paper going in with an out-of-this-world lineup, an out-of-this-world pitching roster. We had Verlander. We had Scherzer. Sure, DeGrom was gone, but we were making up for it with star power. And then the game started being played. So it's something that if you don't embrace the chaos, if you don't embrace this wild ride that is being a Mets fan, that you're not going to survive easily. I was there last year at the Grimace game. I was walking down, again, the Shea Bridge. Going to talk about that a few more times, I guess. I was walking down the Shea Bridge with a friend, and all of a sudden these people next to us said, "Is that Grimace on the field?" I was like, "Why would Grimace be at Citi Field?" I look over. Sure enough, it's a big purple blob on the field warming up to throw a pitch. I get to my seats actually before Grimace even threw out the opening pitch. I don't have it with me. It's at my office. But Lindor actually threw a ball to my seats. I have a ball Lindor tossed me about 7 minutes before the Grimace pitch. And Grimace threw out an opening pitch, and we went from 0-5 to OMG. That's the type of fun, though, that being a fan of a cursed franchise can bring. You have the lows. You have 25. We have 2015 getting yanked from us. You have losing to the Yankees in the Subway Series. You have all of these horrible moments that get etched in your mind. But you go on a ride where you start the season off indisputably looking like you are going to be a historic loser. But then some magic happens. A McDonald's mascot throws out an opening pitch. Your backup infielder puts out the Latin pop banger of the summer. You have all of these little moments that combine to make a magical ride that carry you through the NLCS and being just a couple wins away from the World Series. And at that point, you can't even be mad you didn't win at all. Just this was the roller coaster of a lifetime and memories that you will cherish forever.
I feel that. I do.
Scott, that was
beautiful. Just seeing if I have an OMG, one of those giant foam necklaces.
Oh, the necklace is nice.
If it was right here, but it's unfortunately not.
Yeah, I was going to make my next question was going to be about the Grimace and the OMG stuff from last year. It's like, I always felt like the Mets were just the team of destiny. They're a bunch of guys coming out here. Yeah. They're having fun. They're, you know, the pitching lab helped turn out all these great pitchers, and they started going on this massive run. Then they squeak into the playoffs at the end, and then Pete Alonso, massive home run against Milwaukee, and then it's like, oh man, like this team is going somewhere. Like I really thought they were going to be the one to do it. Fortunately, that's not how these things always work, but that must have been quite a ride. Dave, I don't remember the last time the Blue Jays had a story like that coming through
franchise. It's been a really long time because, I mean, 2015 and 2016, we were expecting to be good, and we were, right? I mean, the 2015 season, I guess, to a little bit, because we were like almost 500 when we pulled the trade for Donaldson and Tulowitzki. So like, I guess
David Price and Tulowitzki. Yes.
Sorry. That's what I meant. So I guess that sort of counts because they were, you know, teetering on the edge of being out at that point in time. But realistically, I think you have to go back a lot further than that. Because the Jays historically have been a franchise where either it was they're good and everyone knows they're good and the fans are expecting them to be good, or it's like we're all coming into the season, well, hey, maybe they'll win 70 games this year. Right. So
we'll see. Eventually, Dave, we will have our moment for the Toronto Blue Jays. And
man,
we will,
I hope so.
Maybe, Scott, if you could just throw that ball Lindor gave you up here and maybe give us some of the good vibes that you have here, that'd be great.
Unfortunately, being an NL East team, we have the Phillies, we have the Braves. Even though they're 1-8 right now, you can't count them out. We need that luck ourselves, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I do wish you luck, a lot of luck. Especially when it comes to that other team.
That's right. Just,
you cannot get me to root for them. If it was them versus the Braves, I'm rooting for the soil to collapse.
Wow.
One thing before we get out of here, Scott, we have the Braves coming to the Rogers Center to start next week once our road trip is over. And we have a mutual friend, big Braves fan, that we're getting on the show here. Is there a message you'd like me to pass on to our Braves guest?
Come on. I do. But before that, I have one question for you.
Sure.
Is Marcelo Ozuna legally allowed to enter Canada? I thought people with DUIs can't go up there.
I think there are exceptions. Our hitting coach has a DUI and he was allowed back up in Canada. So I'm sure there are ways to do so. But I think it's special.
I just always have to get some shade in on Ozuna from the Braves.
Yes. We are very much down on Ozuna on this channel as well here. So
fantastic.
That's great.
The only thing I'd have to say is that, you know, Greg Maddux and Chipper, you know, kind of ruined my childhood. So this past week and a half, 2 weeks has been a very, very joyous time for me. You scared me at 0-5, but once you reached 0-7, I just felt a little sad, honestly.
As long as they can keep losing through that trip into Rogers Center, don't let them get hot in your barn. That's what we want. Yep. Scott, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Tell the people at home where they can reach you, where they can get a hold of you, or where they can see your work.
So I am one of the moderators of the New York Mets subreddit, r/New York Mets. On there, I'm Darth Butcher. I'm also a moderator, I guess ball boy is the official term, of the Mets Cord. Don't have an invite link handy. I'll drop one in the comments on YouTube. Other than that, really my work, I have a weird internet presence that I'm not sure if you want to follow. It's a weird mix of baseball, politics, and largely New York Mets. At Blue Sky, I think I'm scottberlin.bsky.social or whatever that is. Honestly, did not come in prepared to pimp myself, so.
That's the thing. It's why we waited to the end of the episode there. Scott, stick around when we play our exit video. We'll chat for you a little bit before we go. But for David Fulton, for Scott, I am Jesse Burrell. Thank you all for joining us. We will be back on Thursday to discuss the Blue Jays' first series in Fenway Park, and hopefully it's not coming off the seal of the series of back-to-back series losses for this team. Hope to get some wins and maybe the offense going for our Toronto Blue Jays, as it's in more cold weather down in Fenway. We will talk then. Until then, let's go Blue Jays.
Let's go Blue Jays.